I'm here at Fringe Central with Hills Jago, who became a bit of a kind of mythic figure for me, as we've only ever met by email.
Yes, we have.
Yeah, and here you are. What, for those that don't know, what is the Amused Moose Comedy Award?
Amused Moose, well, there's two Amused Moose Comedy Awards. There's the one for fringe shows by people who are on the cusp of, well, they've got the ability to move upwards quite quickly. Or unknown completely, but they feel they're ready. And that's for shows. And we also run the Amused Moose National New Comedian, or Comic, which is for baby comics, new comics, who haven't got agents or things like that. Well, that's generally the idea. And they come and do a set. They do lots and lots of... Well, both of them, actually. They all enter online, send in a clip, which is, of course, these days quite easy to do. And then they're watched by dozens of industry people online, which whittles it down. And then we see them live, either in London, if it's the new comedians, and then they end up at festivals and things like that. And then they come to Edinburgh for the final. Or if it's an Edinburgh Fringe show, clearly we see the shows from when the Fringe starts and through till the final, in this case, Wednesday of the Fringe, and choose... In this case, the seven best shows as finalists or nominees. And then in both cases, there's three winners. We don't have one winner and two runners-up because no one will ever say they're a runner-up. So we have these little titles like Outstanding Show and Breakthrough Comedian or People's Champion.
What is a cusp and how do I get on one?
You've got to be a very good comedian, Paul. That's basically it. And be very entertaining. So, in a way, it's not just gag-packed. It's actually to do with it being very entertaining and, you know, would be attractive to a large proportion of of the general public. In fact, this year, we've just, for the first time for the Amused Moose Comedy Awards, we've been offered a two-week run at the Soho Players Theatre in New York for the winner of the Amused Moose Comedy Awards, which is the show's. So it's got to be something as well, now we've got to bear in mind, that will travel. So it can't be too niche and it can't be too British-centric. Fortunately, there's not much this year that's been about Brexit. I think everyone just thought, can't even touch Brexit. Everyone's just going to howl if I mention Brexit.
And in terms of the comedy that you've seen at fringe festivals over the years, is it just more of the same or is it changing?
Oh, it constantly changes. I mean, I've been coming since 1987, for my sins. That's a very long time. And yeah, I mean, when I first came, I think there were about 60 comedy shows, and the whole programme was all mixed up together. It wasn't in sections like it is
Did
now.
Did you hear that, everyone? 60 comedy shows.
60 comedy shows. There was more theatre, of course, because that wasn't actually where it started, because it started with a sketch group in 47, apparently. But anyway, I believe, I might be wrong. It has evolved all over that time, but in those days the programme was actually stapled like a thin magazine, whereas now of course it's bound, great big, such a heavy thing that it's impossible almost to carry around, which is why now everyone has it on their phones.
I know this is a very general question, but generally, do comedians need to adjust their work for the fringe, or can they just bring their stuff?
I think they largely write their show or put their show together with the Edinburgh Fringe as their focus. To some extent, that might be a problem because during the year they're doing material that in some ways may not work in a comedy club, but they've somehow got to test it and build it and so on. So if they're just doing a gag or, let's say puns or gags or just stand-up, that's relatively easy. But they've still got to tweak it a bit to make sure it'll suit an Edinburgh Fringe audience who are possibly slightly more discerning, whatever that might mean. But they're fringe goers rather than comedy goers. So that's the difference. There is a subtle difference in there. But a lot of shows are on a theme. They've got a narrative arc. Also, there's a thing about chunking it into 20-minute sections because audiences get bored. So if you're going to run a running theme, you might need to change the tone, and that might be reflected by a change of lighting. If you've got a room that's got lighting at all or lighting that can be varied, which you may or may not.
Yeah. I remember being at a workshop once where we did this thing called brainstorming, and everyone brainstormed the ideas for something, and then everyone voted, and the best ideas are the ones that got the most votes. But I remember leaving it, looking at the ones that got no votes, and actually they looked like the most radical and promising ideas. Is there a danger whenever you do knockout competitions that the ones that got knocked out in the first round hide the most exciting, radical stuff?
Well, that's very interesting, because people enter, this is, I'm talking here about the Amusemuse Comedy Awards, which is for the shows, which is what we're predominantly focusing on, I think, talking about. They have to film a preview of their show before the 28th of July. A lot of them don't send them in, don't even film them and send them in until the very last minute, so we get a deluge, like literally 50, 60, 70 in 3 days. And the thing is, though, that that's before the Fringe. So when they get to the Fringe and they start working on it, it changes, evolves, and so on. So what we do is we get, obviously, all the scores get sorted up and averaged, and then we know which ones are the top ones that we probably need to focus on. But my colleague and I, we go and see all the shows that have got at least 1.8 or 1.9 score. So we saw 70 extra shows between us, in addition to the ones that were on the long list to start with. So I'm pretty tired, but some of those made their way into the final.
Right.
Because when we saw them live, that spark that one industry person had seen had actually matured into something good. So I think that's interesting.
Perhaps that's how we should run referendums as well. In terms of your experience then of comedy, Do you have a sense of what the difference between good and bad comedy is? Because we talked about being on the cusp. But are there any general principles of, actually, that's a poor comedian and that's an excellent one? What might those ingredients be?
I think at the Fringe, there's a lot more range that's acceptable. Whereas in a comedy club, it's got to be pleasing to a drunk group. I say Fringe goers are more, I don't know, astute, possibly. They will draw a line at some things. They're all the non-PC type things. And like, oh, PC. But it is true. Obviously, there comes a point where, you know, you go, that's beyond the pale. That's unacceptable, racially or sexually or whatever it might be. So there are still confines, but it's less self-censored than it needs to be if you're actually in front of a paying audience in a comedy club, where people have sort of expectations of having a good laugh tonight.
I've noticed that there's far more comedians talking about politics this year than they were last year. And actually, there was no theatre talking about the Scottish independence vote when it was happening up here. Do you think comedians are engaging more now with that? Or is it the same as it ever was?
I think the comedians are always interested in those things, but I think it's sort of cyclical. I mean, if you go back to the days of alternative comedy, which is when I was coming up, I mean, I was on Perrier panel in 1988, and Jeremy Hardy was our winner. So he's fairly political even then. Well, yes, he was. And, you know, we still get that. And Mark Steele was up in Edinburgh not long after that, and he still performs at the Edinburgh Fringe. In fact, I saw him in the street yesterday, walking around incognito with a fedora. The interesting thing, he wasn't incognito because the fedora was purple. So, you know, I think you just have shifts of change. I think people are talking about politics, but they're talking about it not in a more generalised way and its impact on people's lives, if that makes sense this year.
I heard last year on the grapevine that the six-foot posters, which tend to be higher budget, they're often just touring through, were there more than ever. The free fringe shows, people trying new stuff out, were there, but the six-foot posters were also going into the free fringe. You know, and some people said stealing the bucket money, but actually quite a few comedians, promising ones that were headlining and winning awards at the Leicester Comedy Festival, didn't come up here. Just too expensive. So and there's a diversity issue there, because some of those are, you know, Muslim comedians, Jewish black comedians. So is there a problem here now that middle-sized poster that might be A3 or A2 is coming up here less just because of the model here?
So you're saying there's less small posters?
Well, middle posters. So the free fringe is still strong, the top ones, but people in the middle are just playing Leicester and maybe the shows and saying Edinburgh's not an option.
I think there's this feeling of there's now a second tier of festivals that people are doing. And maybe they want to concentrate on those and improve enough and get a reputation enough that they can, when they do come up to Edinburgh Fringe, and they probably are up here doing gigs, but they're probably not bringing their show up, and they won't be up for the entire time, because if you've still got a day job, how do you fit in a month for a start, you know, unpaid, and then you've got to pay the cost of Edinburgh. But I suspect they're all up here looking around, sorting out a room they'd like to be in, and developing a reputation,
right.
And then they'll come straight into one of the big four venues.
Right.
And hopefully by then we'll have management, and they may have a management that's prepared to underwrite that cost for them. It is about 11,000 quid. And I have to say, a lot of these big posters are complete, what would the word be? Not an indulgence, but are just, they sort of, the comedians sort of need, there is ego. Sorry, there was the word I was looking for. It's an ego thing, a vanity thing. If your show's good, people talk about it in queues. You don't need to have posters up. And I mean, you look at the number, you go around the city and count the percentage of shows that you know that are good, even ones that have got lots of stickers stuck on them with 4 and 5 stars. It's actually really quite low. You know, I would say 90% of shows probably wouldn't get anything like a 4-star review even, and yet they spent a stack of money on having posters up because they believe that's what you've got to. Haven't got to do that at all. One of our finalists hasn't got any posters anywhere except inside his venue, which is way down the Royal Mile, almost down by the Palace.
Finally, if let's say a new comedian here, they've gone on the Free Fringe or in one of the venues, they've had quite an interesting experience, a good one, they want to do more comedy, and they've just heard on the press release there was something called the Amused Moose Comedy Award. So I think, how do I get involved in that next year? What do they need to do next?
They go onto the Amused Moose website, they click on awards, and it tells them how to do it.
That's simple.
They just click and click links and it's done. But the one thing they will have to do is write a good show and film it on a smartphone's fine. Before the end of July. And what I would always say is that some of them say, well, I haven't filmed it yet. You should film every time you perform. And although you hate watching yourself, you will realise why a particular gag didn't work. And it may be nothing to do with you. It may be that there was some disturbance in the audience that you weren't aware of, or there was a noise going on and it just killed an actual punchline. So if they don't film themselves and watch it, and then they can choose when they get round to filming their previews, they can choose which preview they think is the best one, that has the best sound, the best quality, and that they feel happiest with their performance, rather than just filming it once on Wednesday before they have to send it in on the Friday or Saturday. And they just, and then they say to me, as one person did, oh, it didn't film. So I had to say, well, why don't you find your local pub, ask them if you can have the room upstairs. Find a way of lighting it. Someone somewhere is going to have some lights that they can, even lounge lights, spotty lounge lights or something, and get all your friends to come in front of 15 people, just film your show again. And one person actually did that this year, and he was in our shortlist. He didn't make it to the final, but he was on the shortlist.
Fringe comedians, it's easier than you think. Thanks for talking to Fringe Review.
Okay, thank you.